I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. Our bloggers are asking, did Barack Obama steal a speech from Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick? Plus, where were you when Michael Jackson unleashed his record-breaking album Thriller 25 years ago? This week, we've got Valencia Rohner with us. She runs the blog Diary of a Content Black Woman. Education analyst Casey Lartig, his blog is The Casey Lartig Show, and writer and social activist Yubachi Boswell of the blog blackperspective.net. Hi, folks.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
So we talked a little bit about this earlier in the show, but we want your take. Barack Obama gave the speech this weekend in Wisconsin, counterattacking Hillary Clinton, who says he's all words and no substance. And it included the phrase, don't tell me words don't matter. I have a dream, just words. That's Obama. He may have been quoting Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. So Yubachi, Deval came out early to support Barack Obama. Patrick is black. He's the governor of Massachusetts. And, you know, he says it's all good, but is that enough to make it okay?
Well, I don't see where the real problem was. The whole phraseology, the whole part that was quoted was popular or classic American rhetoric. It wasn't even Deval Patrick's words anyway. It was JFK and Roosevelt, and this is classic American rhetoric, and these things are quoted regularly. When Kennedy quoted Roosevelt, you have nothing to fear but fear itself. He didn't stop in the middle of the speech to say Roosevelt said it, but that's the way rhetoric goes. You don't have to stop at every moment to make citations. A speech wouldn't flow very well if you did that all the time.
On Monday, Patrick appeared on Good Morning America, and this is what he said.
And nobody's great policies, by the way, end up on the sides of any of the monuments or buildings in Washington. It is those words, that ability to inspire. And I think that is a tremendous power of Barack Obama, and I'm neither surprised nor troubled that he used the words that I asked him to use of my own.
Valencia, is this a case where you have a candidate who's obviously huddling with some of the best minds in the country, and this is just what happens when you're sitting around in a war room situation, exchanging ideas with people who support you?
Oh, absolutely. Deval and Barack have made it clear that they're good friends. They say they share the same campaign manager and David Axelrod. I mean, you know, they're boys, essentially. And he's like, listen, you can use my line. This was not a dissertation. This is not a PhD thesis. This was a couple of lines within a speech. It's not like he used Deval Patrick's speech verbatim, word for word. So I just think it was just merely a desperation move on Clinton's part because they can't come up with anything else to get Barack on it at this point.
Casey, one blogger compared the incident to Jason Blair, the New York Times reporter who said that he'd fabricated stories after being basically hunted down in his news organization. Blair was a total disgrace. What about Obama?
The comparison makes no sense at all. Blair lied. Blair made up stories. Blair talked about being places that he had never been. It's more like Bill Clinton saying he has seen black churches burn more so than anything that Obama just said. Now, I think this whole thing is overblown and it's even pathetic. I think that as one of the other guests said that, you know, that the Clintons are just so desperate for anything. And you look at the kinds of things that gone after him about, you know, what he said back in kindergarten, this thing that he's stealing lines from a buddy of his. You know, and they released the secrets that he wrote in his book. I mean, it's just that they're so desperate. Now, I think there may have been some actual political strategy here as far as maybe, you know, they want to block an endorsement from Joe Biden in addition to also trying to undercut Obama for what he's known for. But, you know, I'm just surprised that Clinton, for example, didn't release, you know, Chappaquiddick information on Ted Kennedy when he announced that he was for Obama. So this is the way that Clintons operate. And I think this is part of Obama's appeal, that he's saying, look, let's drop the old style smear politics that people are about. And the Clintons are showing up and they're offering even more of what it is that's turning people off. So actually, I think this ends up playing into Obama's hands more than anything else.
Valencia, there's another controversy. While Barack Obama has been battling this issue, Michelle Obama's made her own headlines. And she spoke during a rally and said, quote, hope is making a comeback. And let me tell you, for the first time in my adult life, I am proud of my country. Not just because Barack is doing well, but I think people are hungry for change. A lot of folks jumped on her and said, what do you mean you weren't proud of your country? Well, you know, what kind of unpatriotic blankety blank are you? What do you think of this?
Well, I guess I'm in good company because a lot of people jumped on me, too, on my blog. I wrote about her statements. I said that I can understand, as an African-American woman growing up in this country, she was born in 1963 in the Midwest. As a black woman, you experience and you witness a lot of injustice and a lot of unfairness in spite of your success. And I think this is what she referenced. I wrote about that on my blog, as well as wrote about Cindy McCain's response to it. You know, Cindy McCain, you know, with all due respect, she volunteers for a living. I mean, so she, you know, and she has a master's, you know, in something. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it does not equate to a Michelle Obama. So my point, and as a result, I got like 300 hits in about 10 minutes from
wow.
some very angry, I presume, white folks who just were calling me and her all kinds of names to the point I had to stop comments. So I think it just, again, it's another sign of desperation of people who are not happy with Barack's campaign. And I, too, am very proud of this country. As I said, after Iowa, I wrote, after the Iowa caucus, I wrote, I'm very pleased because I'm seeing something that I did not think was possible. And I'm very proud to be proud of this country as a result.
Yabachi, is this, you know, this whole election in some ways has become more racialized week by week. Is this one of those things where a black person can say this and other black folks, whether they agree or disagree, may say, oh, okay, I understand where she's coming from, but people from other backgrounds may or may not get it?
To some degree. I think people who come from what she's coming from understood what she was trying to get across. And I think what people have to do when they're speaking is realize that everyone else is not in your head and they're not exactly coming from your experience. So you have to elaborate what your frame of reference is when you say something.
Did she mess up? Did she mess up for the campaign team?
She made a slight mistake rhetorically in not expanding on what she was trying to say. I understand where she was coming from. What she was saying was that she was proud in a particular way that she had not had the opportunity to be proud of this country yet before. I don't think she was trying to say that she was never proud of America in any way. She was speaking in particular regards to the context she was speaking about. But when you don't elaborate on that, sometimes people don't understand where you're coming from. But if this is the best that they have against the campaign, it's not really much that they have against the campaign. This is the best type of stuff they can come up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Casey. A couple of things. One, I can understand. It's like an Olympic athlete who says, you know, I feel like I'm representing my country, and it's more so than any previous case, and even though I've been a citizen and been happy with all that, that now it's like they're representing the country, they're representing bigger things than before. So maybe, you know, that could be another angle. But I think one danger from this is that Barack Obama has been saying it's not about race, you know, race is not an issue. But now we have people explaining, say, well, but wait, it is about race. And I think that's the kind of thing that can turn voters off, including the ones who've been chanting, it's not about race. And I think she might have also gotten reminded that people are going to be diagramming her sentences like she's back in grammar class and analyzing every single word that she utters, that now everything as far as that she says and does is on the record. So she'll probably have to be a little more careful.
Well, in case you're just tuning in, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We're doing our bloggers roundtable with Casey Lartig. His blog is The Casey Lartig Show. Valencia Rohner, she runs the blog Diary of a Content Black Woman, and writer and social activist Yabachi Boswell of BlackPerspective.net. Before we jump back into the substance, Valencia, Diary of a Content Black Woman, you have Diary of an Angry Black Woman. You have a lot of blogs that are referencing that. Why are you content?
Well, first of all, the blog was the same URL, but it was called Why Black Men Are Angry. I made the conscious decision to change the name to Diary of a Content Black Woman because when I started the blog, I was very angry about a whole bunch of stuff, but I did not want to be angry anymore. So it was a kind of a way, and one of the reasons I was angry because for so long we've had angry white man radio, if you will, and I just felt like there was a limited number of voices. Well, it kind of seemed like after the whole Imus debacle, it just kind of put light on the limitation of black voices. And then over the last year, because we're coming up on the year anniversary of that situation, it seems like there's been more of forums available for blacks to share their voices. I don't have a problem with angry white men expressing their views, but I think there needed to be an opportunity, and I wanted to lend my voice.
Need to be more angry black people? Is that what you're saying?
No, but I think there needs to be more of a balance of perspective. And I think as a result of all the disparities that exist and the apparent lack of opportunity that seemed to be for African Americans to give their perspective on certain issues and things that impacted the country's views of African Americans and our take on things. I think that's why blogging is so wonderful and shows like yourself, so we can have an opportunity to express our voice. So I'm not angry anymore. I'm far more content.
That's good to know. And Yubachi and Casey, there's been a lot of movement around the Black blogosphere and this emerging group of people, and blogs right now are the talk of the political season. They really, you know, started getting entrenched last election, presidential election, but now blogs are so important, and you're seeing this emergence of a whole community of Black bloggers. Casey, is that having an effect on dialogue?
I suppose so. I mean, I got into blogging just because it's an outlet for me, because if you are a blogger, you're someone who you think you have something a little different than what other people are saying, or even if you're saying the same thing, that you can say it better than others. So so I guess now that we can add our voices to this dialogue, because it is good that it's no longer like the top three networks that are presenting views, that people have so many more options out there than before. So, yeah.
Yubachi, do you think you're making a difference?
We're definitely making a difference. We can see it in a lot of the campaigns that we've engaged in over the last year, whether it be Sharonda Cotton or the Agenda 6, and just raising awareness of the general populace. A lot of us have an enormous amount of daily hits. We've also coalesced together in some different groups, some such as the Afrosphere, and we have really been working together to put a lot of issues on the map, and being able to have that network with one another, where a great many of us will be able to put out the same information at the same time, have our own different perspectives, but things that are often not even covered by the mainstream media or are barely given mention, we are able to put out there and be another source of news for people to go to, another source of opinion beyond the norm. And I think that is very powerful for not only for us personally, but for the people, that they can have media that's outside of just the corporate media's hands.
This is something that's close to my heart. Last week, the 25th anniversary edition of Michael Jackson's Thriller was released.
It's close to midnight. Something evil's lurking in the dark. Under the moonlight, you see a sight that almost stops you.
It has sold over 100 million copies worldwide, and that's Michael in his prime before he got a little more blanco. Yubachi, where were you when you first heard this? I don't know how old you are, but
I was
you don't
four
have to tell
going
us.
On five when that came out.
Stab me in my old heart.
But, okay, I don't remember when the album exactly came out, like the day it dropped, but what I do remember is when the Thriller video, actually it was the Beat It video, appeared on MTV, and that was a big event for some reason. And back then there was actually weren't a lot of Black artists on MTV. It was just Prince.
Michael Jackson's label had to basically go to the mat with MTV to even get the videos on.
Right. And I was in Detroit for some reason at some relative's house, and it was a big event to sit down in front of the TV, the whole family, and we pre-planned to sit down and watch that video that night. And we ended up getting the album for Christmas later on that year. My mom bought the 12-inch, and me and my sister basically scratched it up to death on our plastic Fisher-Price record player, if you remember those with the orange handle back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And
I
think it's still on the TV stand at my parents' house right now, but it's probably scratched up to death. I was kicking it and running over it.
Valencia, what did this album do for you?
I was in the eighth grade, I think, when it dropped. So I'm a little older than Yubachi, but I just remember loving it. I think that comes to mind was when he performed at the 25th anniversary of Motown, I think it was, and yes. A bunch of my friends came over to my house, and we were screaming in front of the television because he was doing the moonwalk, and it's like the whole world just stopped to watch that one performance. So it was definitely life changing. And I think I had a cassette tape as well as the actual album.
Yeah, I was mainly a cassette girl myself. So, Casey, has all the drama that Michael Jackson has been through and generated, has that, you know, faded the shine a little bit on what he did in the past, or are those two separate things?
Well, you know, I was actually a member of the Jacksons fan club back in the 1970s. I still have a signed photo of the entire Jackson family that I might put on eBay one day. Yeah.
Did you have the red jacket with the zippers on it?
No, I didn't go that crazy. You know, but actually, I've got to admit, I'm more of a Prince fans, I'm looking forward to the 25th anniversary of Purple Rain. That's what I'm really looking forward to. And I'll probably put something. I've actually written on my blog about the whole Michael Jackson versus Prince. Michael Jackson, definitely a lot of the shine is gone. I mean, I just wish the guy would just go back in the studio and just make good music like he used to. But, the kind of thing that Prince still does.
Keep children out of his bed.
Well, yeah, that kind of thing, too.
I didn't
and
say
parents, it. Keep your kids away from him would be the
please.
Best thing. So.
Well, to take us out, I want to play a little bit of the new Michael Jackson, that part of a whole cover of the original tracks. This is The Girl Is Mine with will.i.am.
The way I rock, the way I rock.
I don't understand the way you think, saying that she's yours, not mine. Sitting roses and your silly dreams, it's really just a waste of time, because she's mine.
She's mine.
Valencia, how are we feeling about that?
Oh, don't mess with a classic.
And on that note, I'm going to bid all of you guys farewell. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Valencia Rohner blogs at Diary of a Content Black Woman. She was here with me at our NPR West studios. Casey Lahr Tigg's blog is called The Casey Lahr Tigg Show. He was at NPR's headquarters in Washington, D.C. And writer and social activist Yabachi Boswell writes the blog Black Perspective. He was at Spotland Productions in Nashville, Tennessee. That's our show for today. Thank you for sharing your time with us. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. To join the conversation or sign up for our newsletter, visit our blog at nprnewsandviews.org. News and Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Tomorrow, Khalil Islam spent more than 2 decades in prison for Malcolm X's assassination. Islam still says he didn't do it. Is he a fall guy or the trigger man? His story in his own words.
Time to be big. Won't you come as emergency? Cool a fire, yarn and honey, come set me free. Don't you know now is the perfect time? We can dim the lights just to make it like in the night.
I'm Farai Chidea. This is News and Notes.